Lives Matter automatically means he's against the police, or the same thing happened with Bill de Blasio. With you had New York City police officers turning their backs on the mayor because he has a black son and dared to speak about things that he knows are going to affect his son and affect his family. I think that we need to do, I don't know what can be done about that, but we need to stop that thinking. We need to make it so that this country, Americans, the police, the government values black lives, but also realizes that black people aren't saying that only our lives matter, but that our lives matter as well.
We're going to have to leave it there. And I want to thank you very much for all being with us. Again, in our headline today, we said an African-American U.S. citizen has applied for asylum in Canada, saying he fears he'll be killed by police in the United States because simply he is black. You can go back to our headlines to check that news story. Thank you so much to David K. Johnson and Imani Gandhi, as well Jamil Smith and John Nichols. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio with host Joanne Harstey. Today we'll discuss Portland Mayor Charlie Hale's announcement that he won't run for a second term.
KBOO Community Radio, along with the International Leonard Peltier Defense Committee and the Jericho Movement, is a proud co-sponsor of Decolonization and Political Prisoners, Thursday, October 29th from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. at the Portland State University Native American Community Center. The evening will focus on U.S.-held political prisoners and decolonizing the prison-industrial complex. Speakers include Chauncey Peltier, son of Leonard Peltier, Kent Ford, founder of Portland Black Panther Party, and father of Patrice Lumumba Ford, and Ajamu Umi of the Portland chapter of the All African People's Revolutionary Party. Again, that's Decolonization and Political Prisoners, Thursday, October 29th from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. at the Portland State University Native American Community Center, located at 710 Southwest Jackson Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Dia de los Muertos Celebration at Audio Cinema in Portland. On November 1st, from 1 p.m. to midnight, this is a celebration of life, honoring loved ones that have passed on via food, live musical performance, live dance performance, sugar skull decorating, children's storytelling, and much more. Again, that's Dia de los Muertos Celebration at Audio Cinema, 226 Southeast Madison Street in Portland, on November 1st from 1 p.m. to midnight. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Cascade Media Convergence, a regional gathering of community-based media makers sharing space and skills to build solidarity on November 14th and 15th on the Portland State University campus. There will be skill shares, issue-based strategy sessions, regional breakouts and workshops, as well as movie screenings and a keynote presentation, editors of Octavia's Brood, science fiction stories from social justice movements. Again, that's the Cascade Media Convergence, November 14th and 15th, on the Portland State University campus in downtown Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members in a grant from Portland Saturday Market, from our hands to yours. Celebrating 42 years of American arts and crafts, freshly prepared foods with an international flavor, and local music every Saturday and Sunday through Christmas Eve. Local artisans, international food, live music, PortlandSaturdayMarket.com.
Good morning, good morning. I'm Joanne Hardesty, and welcome to Voices from the Edge. We were all thrown, I think, for a loop last week when we heard that our mayor had chose not to run for re-election. And I have to say, I was a bit stunned by the announcement, but I was waiting for the other two city council members to also say they would not be seeking re-election. But I guess I have to continue to wait for that one. And so the question becomes, are we as a community going to sit back and let Ted Wheeler just ease into the mayor's seat with no competition? Or are we actually as a community going to identify other people that should step up and run for mayor? And before you call, let me tell you, I am not planning to run for mayor, not in 2016. No desire, no plan. So don't start talking about the potential of me running, because it's not going to happen. But I very much would like to hear your ideas about who you think would be a good mayor for the city of Portland based on the current severe challenges that we face. As you may know, yesterday's city council voted to set aside to actually build some additional housing, and they voted to for a package that is supposed to identify $55 million in new funds to develop about 800 new housing units. I'm not sure if this fits under an affordable definition, and I'm not sure what the definition the city council is using to say affordable as far as housing is concerned. So I look forward to seeing more come out of that. And what my hope is that this election season coming up next year will give us the ideal opportunity to be asking people who want to either be elected or want to be reelected about what specifically they're going to do to solve some of the major issues that we have in the city of Portland. And I don't have to tell you what the major issues are. We have a police force that still is not following the Constitution, still targeting and harassing people who they believe are powerless in our community. We have a city core that working people can't afford to live in anymore. Unless you're making a six-figure income, you can't afford to live within the city of Portland. We are pushing people out into the edges, into communities that have no desire to have a multicultural, multiracial, multigenerational community. And that's not even getting into the environmental side of the challenges that we're facing. So I bet we could all list, like, what are the top five problems in the city of Portland? And then this would be great. And what would a appropriate candidate for the Portland City Council have as a solution to those longstanding problems? So those are the questions for you this morning. First question is, who are some of the good people that we should be encouraging to step up and run for Portland City Council? That's number one. And number two, what are the top three to five issues that you think those people should be working on? So if you want to join the conversation, give me a call at 503-231-8187. Good morning, Joanne. Welcome to KBOO.
Joanne.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, there's so much I want to say, but I can't because it won't do no good. But I'm going to say this, and it probably won't do no good. I can't wait for people to do something, whether it's you or federal people or anybody else, do something about my low-income issues. You folks everywhere be writing about it and talking about it forever. So anyway, here's what I did. I know, and I also realize you and other people think I'm a jerk, a pain in the neck and a butt, but, you know, I can't, well, that's the way it is.
Joanne, I don't think that at all.
Anyway, Joanne, it doesn't matter. I'm going to say this and get off.
Okay.
So I called, I left a message, I don't expect, And I did leave my telephone number because our name, because I don't, probably not going to even listen to it, but I made complaints about the ongoing, year after year, spying on us. 24 hours a day in my housing, and I know it has the support. I know the police are involved and Home Forward and church. But anyway, I'll get off the air and I'll say goodbye.
Thanks for the call, Joanne. Just know, don't put me in a category of people that think you are a joke, because that's not me. I don't think that at all. Back to the phone line. Good morning, Rebel. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning. I have a couple things to say about the mayor leaving. The first thing that I'd like to say is good riddance. Boy, I'll tell you, that's just one more jerk out of office, and we need them all out of office. We need every single one of these dirty, lying criminals that do not care about the people or their interests. They only care about their own interests. We need all of these guys out of office. And as far as what you're saying about who we need to replace them,
mm-hmm.
we need to really take care of this. You know, it's really hard to get our candidates elected because the voting system's corrupted. And, you know,
what do you mean the voting system's? The voting system's not corrupted. The only problem is that the hard part about getting grassroots folks elected is that they don't have money to buy the airwaves.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's part of the corruption, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a system that's rigged against the average grassroots person actually getting in there.
Well, that's true.
The people that get in there are, slaves to the corporate overlords and, you know, by the money system. And, yeah, I mean, it's just corrupt. It's really hard for us to actually get a good person in there. The only people that actually get in there are the snakes and liars that deceive people. So that's what I had to say about Hales. You know, I mean, Sam Adams is a real jerk. Hales is a bigger jerk, I think. And, you know, the police are absolutely corrupt, and he's the ultimate boss of them.
Well, you know,
Black Lives Matter.
I admired Sam Adams. Because I didn't always agree with him, but what I admired about him is he was at least a man of his word. So if he said he was going to call, he'd call. If he said he was going to do something, he would do it. If he said he was going to follow up, he would. And I respect that, and I don't have to agree with everything my politician says or does, but at least want to know they're responsive. And I agree with you. I believe this is the least responsive city council that we've had in quite some time. And so knowing that a majority of them think they should be reelected, well, now actually there isn't a majority, is it? Now there's just two of them that think they should be reelected. Maybe I think we could do better. So,
yeah, absolutely. We have this, general feeling that we have to settle for the lesser of two evils.
Yes, yes.
That's how every position and every election is for every spot. So, you know, we really have to go for the best. And, you know, this lesser of two evils stuff is what the corporate masters serve to us. And just one really quick comment about Sam Adams. He may have been a man of his word on keeping appointments and, you know, doing damage control with the general population. But that's all it was. He lied to Occupy. He evicted Occupy brutally, a huge violation of our First Amendment. You know, the city's in lockstep with the mainstream media. The mainstream media is liars. We all know the drill.
Yes.
And all I have to say about him leaving, and I'll go now and let other people, make comments, is good riddance. Goodbye, snake and liar.
Thank you for your call, Rebel. Have a good day.
Yeah, you too.
Thank Bye. You. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Three seats up on the Portland City Council. One candidate has declined to run for reelection. What do we need? What do we want? I'm sorry, who's on the phone? Hello, Ted. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi, Joanne. I'm sorry to hear you're not going to be running.
Yeah, I'm not.
Anyway, you do a great job. I love your radio show.
Thank you.
I'm concerned about, I've been working on the comprehensive plan, the Portland Comprehensive Plan, which is up for approval in early next year.
Oh, yes.
And I think it has a lot of impact on affordable housing, on how we want development to proceed in Portland. And I've been astounded. This is really my first foray into real city politics, testifying at meetings and so on.
Right.
You're right. Total disinterest. Your voice is not heard.
Mm-mm.
And anyway, with regard to Charlie Hales, we've been looking forward to having some response for him because he will be, you know, seemingly was going to be answerable to the electorate.
Yes, yes.
But now he's free.
Right.
And
that's right.
I'm very concerned about this angle about it. I think Charlie Hales never met a developer he didn't like. And I'm also very concerned about what he's going to do with the police department. But now he has a free hand.
Yes.
And I think we need to think about that and think about how we can put pressure on the other ones who are running. But I've always wondered why did Charlie Hales want to be mayor? What
right.
was his mission?
Right.
And now he's got a free hand to do whatever he wants. We have to struggle to think of ways to limit that.
Well, and you may remember when he ran, his whole centerpiece of his campaign was fixing the police. That was
yes.
the whole centerpiece of his campaign. We've got an out-of-control police force, and his job was going to be to fix the police. And since he's been there, one of the first things he did was hire a police officer to be the gatekeeper between his office and the community. And so he's consistently said one thing and done something else. So I personally am very thankful he's not running for re-election, so we don't have to worry about four more years. But I am also concerned what will happen in this next year. It's wonderful to make all these promises, $55 million additional dollars, but where's the land? Where's the housing going to be built? What's real affordability look like when
yes.
you've got people that can't afford to live within the city boundaries?
Absolutely.
I think that there's a lot more questions that have to be answered. And I know housing folks are all over this, but I also know that there needs to be a lot more people paying attention because the city's good at doing baits and switches. I appreciate you participating in a comprehensive plan process because I've got to tell you, I've participated in many, many long-range plans in the city of Portland. And unfortunately, what happens is it depends on who's in office at the time. Sometimes the plans are pulled off the shelf and dusted off and used. And other times they just kind of sit on the shelf because it was from somebody else's administration.
Well, this one, I think, is not getting enough attention, even on KBOO. I was on KBOO once talking about it about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it is very important. I think it's different than the previous plans. I think it's really bad, the draft, and I think it's very poorly written. It's very heavily skewed toward developers and what they want, streamlined, less zoning, streamlined processes and so on. Anyway, it needs the attention of the community, and there's a little bit of a chance to make a comment at the city council coming up on November 19th at the city council. Please come down and testify.
All right.
And just pick up the plan, read a few pages. You will immediately see what it's all about. It's very worrisome.
Well, thank you very much. And because you've given me that heads up, maybe I'll put a program together earlier in November so that we can have the conversation leading up to the city council meeting.
That would be fabulous. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Bye.
503-231-8187. We're going to have a new mayor. We're going to have, hopefully, a new city council. And what is it that we need from the new mayor and the new city council as we move into election season? Good morning, James. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. I'm like the last call. I'm definitely glad to hear that Charlie Hales is not running again. He is a... I have lots of words for him, but
we're on video, remember.
Yeah, I know. So one thing that I would like to see the new mayor do is, you know, I would like to see him engage more of the communities of color.
Yes.
You know, Charlie Hales, I mean, all of his focus has been on just the beer, bikes, and Birkenstocks crowd. I mean, everything that's been done, even in the traditionally black parts of Portland, all of it's been geared towards all this new young white semi-affluent money. I'd like to see the new mayor really try to engage the entirety of Portland,
mm-hmm.
not just not just the part with money. I saw a flyer on this telephone pole where it was talking about how you know, all the people who are moving to Portland have money. So it's like Charlie Hales just wants to govern a city full of people with money. So I
hear what you're saying, and I think I certainly believe that we could do so much better than we're doing. I can't imagine that all the people who are moving here can afford $1,800 a month for a studio.
Well, one thing that I had heard is that on the East Coast, because of the huge price inflation, even though rent prices out here are higher than what we're used to as Portlanders,
right,
it's actually a lot cheaper, and so much so that a lot of the people who move here from the East Coast can find it much more comfortable to move here.
It sounds like San Francisco prices is what we have nowadays.
Yeah,
It's like, no, whatever street you go on, there are multi-story apartment buildings going up, or condos.
Yeah.
Now, I know the condos that are going up on North Williams start at $720,000.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Right? If you had that kind of money, who would want to live in a building with no parking, with a little bit of space, no land, for $720,000? But apparently, there are people who just can't wait for that building to be built so they can do that. I have a friend that develops like little houses. What do you call those? Small.
Yeah, the little houses.
The small houses, and the city council won't even talk to them about that as a opportunity to create some housing for folks now who are houseless. It's amazing to me how many great ideas just go away because we're so focused on what the developers are doing.
Yeah, and that's funny because we have actually, there's a pretty good thriving community of people who own tiny houses.
Yes.
I was actually looking into that myself. I mean, you have to downsize quite a bit.
Right.
But I mean, I think it would be a great way to counteract all this ridiculous condo building out here, just because, you know, it's like we don't need it. I mean, it's not for Portlanders.
No,
you know,
no.
We're having such a density problem that it's like, you know, we're literally running out of room to grow outward, so we're growing upward.
Yes, it's absolutely true. And, you know, and part of it makes sense because you're trying to control the urban growth boundary. However, a smart planning process would have ensured that they put mechanisms in place that didn't displace people once the improvements happen.
And that's been the problem.
Yes, that's been one of our biggest problems. And quite frankly, it seems to be something that the politicians don't even consider. They take credit. Oh, we got all these nice new fancy buildings, except the people who've lived here can't afford to live in them. And you can't afford to eat in the restaurants that pop up, you know. So it's like,
they're literally killing our. It's literally killing our economy. I mean, even with just the minimum you're paying on an apartment in Portland, what's like $1,200, $1,500
right.
a month?
Right.
It's like you can't even afford groceries. It's like
no.
You have
right.
to decide whether you want a place to sleep or whether you want to eat.
It's absolutely true. And we could do so much better, but what we have is politicians who have a mindset of how things should be done. And so we'll just keep doing it the way we've always done it because that's the way we do development rather than actually being really creative. I'm still looking for the plan that creates multi-generational housing. So seniors are watching the kids while the parents are out at work and there's like shared kitchen and shared living space. I mean, we could create some really creative housing if we had the political world to do it. Because I know we've got really creative people out in the community.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I'm talking about by engaging the community. I mean, we need community, I think. But I think a lot of that is kept separate because there's a lot of money in, you know, childcare.
Right.
I mean, childcare is ridiculous. I have a friend who's paying like $2,000 a month on top of what she's paying for rent to have somebody watch her kid while she works.
Right. So she's kind of like just working to pay rent and pay the childcare provider.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That's
so,
the reality.
I totally agree. Totally agree. We need more of like a village system than we need an apartment.
Well, and then we have to kind of figure out. So I can't imagine that all the new people moving here are all making six-figure incomes. And so the question is, how do we engage the new folks? Because one of the things that makes me crazy about the new folks is they think that they developed Portland. They think they showed up and all of a sudden, look at what I created. Look at how wonderful this is, right? Not understanding who's been displaced, who has been targeted and removed from the community, how the lack of investments made it possible for them to now come and live in this pretty, clean, sparkly
Williams Avenue.
Yes, right? Right. You look at Williams and you think, you know, if you had been here a decade ago, you would have a different story about what's happening on Williams. And I have to say, it's even hard to walk on Williams Avenue. And when the couple of times that I've done that, people look at me like I'm lost. Like, what are you doing over in this neighborhood? Because clearly I don't look like I belong on Williams Avenue anymore.
Yeah.
Because it's not for people that look like me.
Yeah. Well, I think we should definitely collaborate and get on your Portland handbook you keep talking about introducing all the new folks to the real Portland.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I think that's something we should work on. Thank you so much. I've enjoyed our conversation today.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Have a great day.
You too.
Bye-bye. Thank you. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Hello, John. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning, Joanne. Great conversations.
Thank you.
I just turned the radio on a little like 10 after 8, and I heard a caller say something about the corrupt voter system.
Yes.
And you argued with that point of view. Well, I heard one of the best interviews I've ever heard on KBOO 2 or 3 months ago by an author who wrote a book called Code Red. And it's a book that investigated the takeover of the electronic voter system by the Republicans.
Oh, yes.
And so
anytime
they want to flip a outcome of an election, they can do it.
Yes, so only reason I was questioning him is because, as you know, in Oregon, we have vote by mail. Now, if I lived in a place that had those electronic voting machines that didn't give you a paper trail, I would not have challenged him at all. But knowing what I know about Oregon's system, that's why I challenged him. But you're absolutely right. I mean, I'm amazed at how many people still today. In black communities, people stand in line 10 hours to vote. They still have old breaking down machines. They get lots of provisional ballots. Even today in America, that happens. So it's not that I don't think that there's corruption in the voting system. I just didn't think that his point his point about corruption didn't have anything to do with the voting system.
So we don't seem to have the Democratic Party willing to stand up and say the voting system is broken.
No.
We don't have the media willing to say it. So
no.
We need KBOO to say it loud and clear.
Well, the problem
I've only heard about that book that one time, and
right.
nobody else seems to know about it. But it's completely, they can manipulate every single vote, local votes, national votes. They can manipulate any one of them.
Well, again, everything depends on who the Secretary of State is in the state that you live in, because each state controls their own election processes. And so everything depends on the Secretary of State. So we actually live in a state where the Secretary of State is really a pro-voter Secretary of State. I mean, we've been very fortunate over the last couple of decades to have Secretary of States who believe that we should be making it as easy as possible for people to vote, not hard. Whereas, I mean, you know, pick a state, Texas, Wisconsin, states that are passing these voter ID laws that mandate a state-issued ID card for people to be able to vote. Putting barriers in place to prevent people from participating in the political process. Ironically, you can use your concealed weapons permit as ID, but you can't use a student ID as ID in some of those states.
Carry on. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the call. And it's not that I think that our election system is perfect. I just know that we are head and shoulders above a whole lot of states who do some really nasty things consistently to try to prevent poor people, black people from voting. Thank you.
I'd like to see the United States copy Canada, go to a paper system.
Yeah, well, you know, Greg Palast, he always comes on during election seasons, and he will go to various states and actually give us blow-by-blow descriptions of what's taking place on the ground during election time. And he's never disappointed, and he's consistently talked about the difference between black community voting experiences and white community voting experiences and how radically different they are. So it will be election year all year long next year, so I'm sure we'll have more of those conversations. Thanks for the call.
Have a great day.
Bye-bye. You too. Bye now. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Hello, Brian. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
So, I'm sorry you're not running for mayor.
Oh, thank you.
But maybe somebody just as good. Well, so, you know, my comment is this, is, you know, when Portland had this big drive to get all these people up here from Silicon Valley and different tech places, it was billed as a very affordable place to live.
Yes.
And nobody's going to move up here from Silicon Valley to pay the same amount of money they're paying in San Francisco.
Exactly, right.
And that's the way we're headed.
Yes.
And you know, I mean, we as Portlanders, and I'm not talking about the mayor's office, because they're definitely in an unreality, you know, situation. But, I mean, if you look at it this way, number one, most of our mass transit goes over a 100-year-old bridge that doesn't even belong to us. It belongs to the railroad.
That's right.
Number two, you know, our mass transit is not efficient. And number three, we have a police force that is in the top 10 as far as racially motivated and killing mentally ill people and
yes.
mistreating people. We have second-rate entertainment here. I mean, you know, we just have to face the facts. And what's going to happen and what is happening is when I move around out in the city, I hear a lot of people, oh, I came here for a year and now I'm leaving.
Right.
And that's what's going to happen. It doesn't cost that much to move, you know, away from a city if you have a small business or you operate out of your house. As easy as these people move in, they will move out. And, you know, as a city, what we've done is we have loaned and we have given money to huge developers who are building these buildings
yes.
and walking away from them.
Right. That's right.
Guess who's going to pay the bill?
Right. And you remember how long all these properties sat vacant right after the financial collapse? Right. Because the banks didn't want any part of them. So all of a sudden they became the community's responsibility to take care of until the banks could stop making money off of them again.
Exactly.
And now, foreclosures.
You lived it down on the South Waterfront, and like so much of the percentage of housing went into Section 8. There was a mass movement
yes.
of, you know, people in Section 8.
Right.
And it was a boon for the Section 8 people because they were getting these great, like, you know, condos.
Yes, yes.
Patios and everything.
Right, and right.
Like, as a low-income person, I'm like, right on.
But, right.
But you know what? Past all the jokes and all the game-playing that Charlie Hales and all the other mayors have made in mm-hmm. this city, and the developers that are just putting up, you know, $500,000 condos willy-nilly.
Yes.
Pass the jokes. There are people out there, and I really need KBOO people to understand this, as well as the whole city. There are people out there literally day-to-day suffering.
Yes, yes.
Because of this and being
yes.
pressured.
Yes.
And, you know, it's not exactly, we can't lay it all on the developers' feet. We have to lay it on our regular citizens' feet, and those are the people who are kicking people out of the apartments
yes.
and doubling the rent.
Right.
You know, those are people who are like everyday people.
That's right.
And the people, and I mean, I'm going to get off the soapbox here, but you know, Joanne, the people who are like, you walk into their retail stores and they're saying, well, I'm going to charge you $150 for a shirt and you have nowhere else to go or whatever, you know.
Right, right.
There's no place else to go and I'm going to charge you full retail. Well, when all those people from Silicon Valley decide they're going to split for good reason, you know, this is who's going to fail.
Right. And as you know, that's a boom and bust business, right? So if you're building your property, assuming that you're going to get all these high tech folks in and they're the ones that are going to be living in your like thoroughly expensive housing development, that's only a small portion of the population that actually even would fit that criteria.
Exactly. I mean, you know, and we're actually have allowed our city administration and their deals with the developers, mm-hmm. we've sort of swallowed our own poison.
Right.
You know, we believe that, oh, yeah, everybody's going to be making $50,000 or $60,000 a year,
yes,
or
yes.
$100,000. It's not going to happen.
Right. That's the what's the matter with Kansas theory, right? It's like, right, we just think, oh, we're going to be middle class. We're going to be able to live in one of those things one day, right?
Exactly.
Not if you're working at two minimum wage jobs full time, you wouldn't be able to do it.
Exactly.
Well, I thank you.
I'm going to let you go, and thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate your call, and I appreciate your thoughtfulness, and just keep doing what you're doing. Have a great day. Back to the phone line. Hello, Francis. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi.
I
have no idea who would be the ideal person to be mayor of Portland, but I will hope it is somebody who does take the concerns of low-income people as a priority,
yes.
rather than the developers. And as your first caller, Joanne, was saying, there are issues among people who are called low-income that I think, I'm not quite sure what she was referring to, but I've noticed over the years, and one time I worked part-time for one of those many community development organizations that were established during the gentrification of my old neighborhood in Sabin, and they were not really concerned about the dignity and respect that low-income people deserve. That every agency had to make an agreement, I think they called it a safety agreement, with the police department. And the housing that was provided was that the people living in those residences were constantly monitored, you know, make sure they weren't doing anything illegal. And privacy, I think, is very valuable commodity to most people.
Yes.
And for low-income people seem, for some reason, we think they don't require it.
Right.
Also, as others have mentioned, I would like to see someone who really, as you know, I know Charlie Hale said he wanted to do something about the abuses that are constantly committed by the police department, but I don't think he did. And recently, I think it was the head of the FBI or the Department of Justice or somebody said that the police officers now are concerned that they may not be doing their jobs as well as they could because if they're being monitored and scrutinized so much that, you know, they're feeling pressured and then they don't know if they can do their jobs. They don't know if they would want to get out of their cars and...
Yes, I heard that nonsense,
wait,
too.
Wait a minute.
I heard that nonsense.
These officers took an oath. For some reason, we require them to take an oath
right.
to uphold the Constitution.
Right.
So if they're saying that they cannot do their job without violating the Constitution and murdering people, then maybe we don't need such police departments. They can't do their job, if they consider part of their job to be violating constitutional rights, then they should not be there. And I want somebody who can stand up and say that.
Yes.
And assert that daily, rather than worrying about what some developer needs to continue to make their money. And also, we have people saying that they see what they did wrong while they gentrified my old community. They can see how all the mistakes they made. They can see the abuses that happened. And they're going to work hard to try and to keep that from happening again.
Right.
I want somebody to say, we need to go back and make some kind of reparation to all the people that were displaced and had their constitutional rights violated daily.
Right.
We need to make reparations to those people. Anyway.
That sounds like a good plan. We'll be looking for that candidate. Thanks.
Take care.
Thank you very much for your call. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye. 503-231-8187. If you want to join the conversation, we're talking about who should we be looking for these three city council seats? What are the priorities they should be working on? Hello, Crystal. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning, Joanne.
Good morning.
Teresa Rayford, Mayor, Mike Libby, small houses, tiny houses.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a third one. You.
What? Well, you may not have heard me at the beginning of the program saying I'm not the one. Not next year.
Teresa Rayford should run again. We all voted for her, and now people know her more than ever. And you do need street cred, and you do need money, and I believe she can get both. And the Black Lives Matter movement has brought about so many great leaders, so many great everyday average citizens that have.
So, as you know, Teresa's with Don't Shoot, right? Black Lives Matters is a different group. You are aware
right,
of
but
that.
What I'm saying is that there are so many great leaders coming out of it.
Yes.
That if she handed the reins over and took a, you know, like she did, run for council. And I know she got a lot of votes. And so I'd say now is the perfect time to run again.
Thank you for your call. Appreciate it. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Love to hear your thoughts. I'm sorry, Dave. Good morning, Dave. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning. Hey, Joanne. Thanks for your work on the radio. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I heard a caller earlier talking about Portland not being a very great place to come to because of the high cost of housing. I wonder if we're seeing something different. I mean, we've heard this story some months back from the Oregonian about 75,000 new drivers in Oregon.
Right.
Showing up. I wonder that we're going to be getting a wave of people from around the country due
mm-hmm.
to, like, water shortages,
yes.
drought killing off the farms and
mm-hmm.
cities running out of water, their water getting fracked out.
Yep.
I mean, what is a small city to do of 5,000 people if they lose their water supply? They can't afford some fancy $200 million treatment plant. All they can do is move. And where do they move? They move to where there's water, which is pretty much west of the Cascades.
Right.
So, that's the point I've got. I think we're in for a big wave of climate refugees for the next 10 to 20 years.
I think you're absolutely right. And the question is, like, how do we prepare for all these different economic levels to be able to live comfortably?
I don't know that you can. I think it takes a hyper-awareness on the part of the city council and metro and even the state agencies. And they're caught unawares in Europe and America already by the refugee crisis of Africa.
Right.
So they're behind the curve already. And when you've got climate denial in so many areas of the country, you just need such an incredible future thinking mode that I don't know that that's possible here. So we're going to get swamped. We're going to get L.A. and San Francisco'd out, and
mm-hmm.
we're already going the wrong direction with this micro-housing that we've got with these very small footprint houses, so you create all this density, you overwhelm your infrastructure, electric, water, wastewater, transportation,
right.
And we're seeing that everywhere. You can't get on the roads anymore almost any time of the day you can get.
That's right. No good time to drive in Portland anymore, right? Because there's always a traffic jam.
Yeah, and I don't know that there's any current information that shows us that. They do the counts of population, households, and so on every 10 years, but we're not going to see with any resolution the climb in population that might be occurring right in front of our noses here.
Right.
So I'll take the other thoughts on the radio.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate your call today. Have a good day. 503-231-8187 is the number to call or join the conversation. Ajiana, welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning, Joanne. Thank you for this conversation this morning. I wish I could say that I really knew all of the qualified people for these posts. I don't. But I would say, starting off with, I would definitely want it to be a woman, preferably a black woman, who has been an activist, a leader in the community. And there probably are several of those people. Teresa Rafer's name came to mind, actually. And otherwise, it needs to be, in my opinion, a real representative of the people, not of the developers or the business community. And I do understand that funding is a problem. However, somehow or other, in Seattle, the people's candidate was elected, and if they can do it, I believe we can do it. So I'm thinking of a couple of people who probably aren't politicians and wouldn't want the job, but Israel Bayer of Street Roots.
Yes.
Nick Caleb.
Yeah, Nick's already, I think, dropped out, but who knows? Maybe
what a shame.
Yeah.
And Emily Green, who's a reporter for Street Roots. And there's probably many, many other people. I'm sorry to say I don't, but to me, the most important thing is the police situation.
Mm-hmm.
Not because it's the only thing, but it is the most crucial. This morning, as you may have heard, a 30-year-old African-American asked for political asylum in Canada.
Yes.
Saying that he believed he'd be killed by police sooner or later, and I'm certain that's absolutely true, and what a great political statement that is.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe a lot more people ought to do the same, because it certainly would make sense. In any case, that and the fact of people who are suffering needlessly with being living out in the cold, this is a terrible, terrible thing, and so correctable.
Yes.
So those are my thoughts, and that's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your very thoughtful comments, and I absolutely agree. Someone who makes a real commitment to reforming the police, someone that makes a real commitment to identifying the multitude of housing needs to accommodate every income level or no income level in the city of Portland.
One more thing, if I may, Joanne.
Sure.
I don't in any way believe that we can simply reform the police. My true thoughts on that are that we need to have a citizen agency
yes.
that is completely and uniquely and only answerable to citizens,
yes.
not to anybody else. And apparently that is being done in some other communities in the country, and we need to look at that. So this would be kind of interim, you know, because as long as there's a person in, you know, who can be pressured.
Yes.
It is not going to work. We need to have our own way of coping with whatever problems we have as people.
So you might appreciate this. The community oversight, community liaison, in their second quarterly draft report, recommended that Portland needs to start a process for a truly independent police oversight mechanism that would be controlled externally by the public. And so just know that there is a written document prepared by a certified smart person who's making a bucket load of money off of the taxpayers in Portland who absolutely agrees with you. And I posted that document Did I post it? Not yet. I posted the survey on my Facebook Voices from the Edge page today, but I will also post that second quarterly report, because the more of us that can articulate that need and then be able to use the Certified Smart Person's report to say, well, it's not just me.
Yes.
It's, you know, you even paid this guy. That's but the right. funny thing is they've paid consultants before who've given them the same information that they haven't followed. So, but I think it's the first step when a high paid consultant says you need really independent and not this pretend system that we have with the IPR, I think that's a good day.
Well, Joanne, I hope you'll be able in the near future to dedicate a show to talking to the community about the need for it, how it would happen, and recruiting people to be part of that.
You know, that's coming up.
Okay.
Okay, take care. Okay. Thank you for the call.
Mm-hmm, bye.
And speaking of coming up this morning on Naboo at 9, Press Watch is off. Instead, Pear will host a special Fight the Empire show with guest Roger Lowenstein talking about his new book, America's Bank, The Epic Struggle to Create the Federal Reserve. At 10, Air Cascadia is off. We'll go to a special edition of Flashpoints on the future of marijuana, medicinal and recreational. And then, as always, we want to thank KBOO members and supporters for supporting our last pledge drive. And if you didn't get a chance, you can always go to kboo.fm and click the tip jar and become a member just like that. We're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Sean. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Hey, good morning, Joanne.
Good morning.
So where are Gretchen Kifori, Charles Jordan, Mildred Schwab, and Mike Lindbergh when you need them?
They all serve their time, and they all deserve some peace.
Oh, I'll tell you, man, because really, you know, personally, I just can't recommend anybody, and those were some of Portland's better days, actually.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I had to say that.
Well, you know, when I moved to Portland, there were African Americans on the city council, on the county commission. The police chief was African American. The superintendent of public instruction was that. I mean, it was like on and on and on. And now today we are very content if there's one.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, you know, I have to say that really underneath, I mean, Portland's just a microcosm overall. I think that overall, if you look at the politics going on throughout the country, not just globally, they really are forcing it to try to be much more conservative.
Yes.
And you're even seeing it in Portland.
Yes.
If anybody I could recommend, it would be Israel Beyer over at Street Roots.
You know, that's the second endorsement he's got today.
You know, he has done such a tremendous job.
Yes, he has.
Over at that paper and supporting the down and out. You know, so, I mean, really, obviously, he's not, because people like him, and that's why I don't recommend anybody, because anybody who's on a grassroots level or somebody that we want to go in and do what you would prefer to see happen, they end up really being compromised badly by the system. And so ultimately, you know, really my answer to it is the system is broken.
Yes.
And it's the system that really needs to be replaced and fixed if we're going to see any real change. And so I just wanted to recommend a great book that's called, perfectly, it's called Degrowth.
Degrowth?
Degrowth, D-E-G-R-O-W-T-H.
Ah.
A vocabulary for a new era. And it's all about basically changing the whole paradigm of economics as we know it and using the monies that are used towards this kind of good that we're talking about.
Wow.
So, but I would highly recommend, you know, I know economics is not an exciting thing to read about, but I think everybody should be demanded to, so they can more understand what's going on with their money. But in tandem with a great book by John Kenneth Galbraith called Economics in Perspective, because the great thing about that book is it gives you a historical account of where economics came from before it even existed and why it exists in more the indoctrinated paradigm that we see today.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for those resources. That's going to be very helpful.
Yeah. And so one last thing. You mentioned tiny homes, and they don't consider it. And I think part of it is overall is the reason they don't is I believe that the law states that if a person can build a tiny home on a lot that is, I think it's 250 square feet or smaller, that they don't legally have to pay any taxes.
Well, actually, that's not true because just this year, and in fact, I read an article recently that somebody built like one of those granny flats on to their house.
Right. But that's different, see. And that's,
is the granny flat different than the tiny homes?
Well, it's what's different about it, and this was kind of another quick point I was going to make, is we're talking about affordable housing,
right.
Even though this more affordable housing has to do with the ADUs that are being built on people's lots where they already have an existing house.
Right.
You know, just a week or so ago, they came out where Multnomah County decided to change the law, you know, where first they gave people the incentive to build these ADUs,
yes,
to try to save land and create smaller spaces for,
right,
people to live and rent. And then they turn around, and some people are getting taxed 500% more.
Yeah, because they are assuming that their regular home,
right,
is new construction.
Right.
So everything,
the moment,
yes,
the whole thing is they hold out this carrot and, right, say we're doing a good thing, and then as soon as they do, and it's just another excuse to ream people of,
right,
their money to try to fill up the coffers that never seem to get filled up.
And did they say they're going to fix that? You laugh.
Yeah, right, exactly. So I think the premise, yeah, on that it's different, but if somebody was to try to build a home,
mm-hmm,
that is like a tiny home on a lot by itself,
right,
that if it meets a minimum amount of square footage or less, they actually don't have to pay property taxes. And, of course, they don't want to allow that.
Right, right.
So, yeah.
Well, that might be the reason why that's not beneficial to them. But, the tax, they are getting money. Last budget cycle, the city of Portland had $45 million extra dollars that, mm-hmm, they did not expect.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so it's not, so they're pretending somehow that they're cash poor, and they're really not cash poor at the city council. They're just, it's just where they're investing that cash,
right,
whether or not they're getting the return on that investment that we as a community should expect.
Yeah, and of course, you know, just like on the issues of the tram and everything about development, they're,
yes,
never going to tell you what the true number is.
No.
Because otherwise you're not going to vote for it.
That's right.
Or
that's
if they tell you that they have this extra cash, then where's the justification to ask for something more from the people?
Absolutely,
right?
True.
So they always have to look like they're just hurting to always justify coming back and making people just open up their pockets more and more.
Which
and
is why
again,
we're
where that system is totally broken, and this book, Degrowth, is all about dismantling that whole thing.
Well, I'm going to grab up that book and may actually even invite the author to come and have a conversation, because it certainly sounds like a conversation we should have.
Well, get out three extra chairs, because it's basically a book written by three different authors. But anyway,
cool.
It's fantastic.
Well, thank you. Thank,
yeah,
you very much for your call. I appreciate the vital information that you've provided us.
Thank you, Joanne.
Have a great day.
You too.
Before, I've only got a couple of minutes left, but before we end the program today, I want to bring your attention to a Human Rights Commission meeting that will be taking place on November 4th. And I want to bring your attention to it because you may know that I'm one of the biggest critics there are of Portland's Human Rights Commission, because over the years, they've been pretty silent on many of the major civil rights issues. And so every once in a while, they step out of their comfort zone and provide leadership around some real critical issues that are impacting our community as it relates to civil rights. And so last month, they voted on a resolution at the Human Rights Commission to request that the city do not put a group of businesses on a do not buy list, because these businesses, in fact, are part of part of the occupation that's taking place, of course, with Palestine. And so the Human Rights Commission, which they rarely do, had a unanimous vote automatically and said, oh, yeah, of course, we want to disinvest from these four companies that are part of the occupation of Palestinians. And so lo and behold, the Human Rights Commission votes unanimously. Then they get a letter from the Jewish Federation of Portland calling the chair anti-Semitic, racist. I mean, just a vile, vicious misinformation. And so I just want to take a moment to say on November 4th, the Jewish Federation has been invited to come to the Human Rights Commission. And I think it would be a really good idea for community members to come out and be in the audience, because Shabree Vickers, as the chair of the Human Rights Commission, is doing a fabulous job, and it made perfect sense. And I get incensed when well-off white men yell racism to an African-American woman who is chairing a human rights commission. And so if that just makes you as crazy as it makes me, the Human Rights Commission meets at the Office of Equity and Human Rights on the third floor downtown. You can look it up online. You can get the address. Their meetings normally start at 6 o'clock. It would be great if there was a lot of people in the audience to support the Human Rights Commission for standing up to occupation, the Israel occupation in Palestine. And so I am Joanne Hardesty. It has been my pleasure being here with you today, and I will see you next week, same time, same place, same station. Have a great day. Thank you kindly, Steve. See you guys next week. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that Peter is gold. After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on, get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
And good morning, you are listening to KBOO Portland, Portland's community radio. It is 9 o'clock and an interesting morning. A few changes, a lot of pre-recorded programming today. We've got Air Cascadia off today, and instead we're going to have a special hour-long edition of Flashpoints. Today it's about the future of marijuana, medicinal and recreational. At 11 on Between the Covers, right on time for Halloween, we hear a conversation with Amelia Gray, whose book Gutshot pushes against the outer limits of what humans can and will do. But first, I want to remind you that Press Watch is off today. Instead, Per Fogering hosts Fight the Empire for an hour with guest Roger Lowenstein, today talking about his new book, America's Bank, The Epic Struggle to Create the Federal Reserve. And that is coming up next on KBOO.